Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only.
Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Thanks for joining me for another Blunt Business on CannabisRadio.com. Really appreciate all of you joining us. If you haven't done so, if you haven't subscribed to the show yet, please do so. Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And please rate and review the show. So imagine in the legal market of the District of Columbia, Washington, D.C., would you be surprised there is a meat glass dominated storefront, a dispensary called Monko, M-O-N-K-O, along K Street. And I've always heard about K Street. That's where all the lobbyists are. All the money's there, all the influence to, you know, our bidders in the Capitol Hill or the White House. And the person of said store, Monko, actually is there. I'm fascinated with what he is able to do in terms of what's being done in terms of from a business owner standpoint and an advocacy standpoint. I'm here and happy to go and welcome the CEO and founder of cannabis lifestyle brand Monko and the chairman of the I-71 committee, Terrence White. Terrence, thanks for being on.
Thank you. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. K Street. You couldn't, I mean, talk about location, location, location. First of all, just being put in the same breath as your store is very well seen along that corridor. Talk to me about just the fact of being able to have any spot in D.C., such an influential spot, such a spot of power, and what do you see around the storefront around you and who comes into the store?
Well, it's an honor to, first of all, be with you today. Yeah. So when I started this journey, I'm a real estate guy. So location was everything. And, you know, I wanted to take the stitch and stigma off of cannabis. So what not a better location than K Street? I'm in the Mount Vernon Triangle area of here in the District of Columbia. This area used to be very impoverished, drug fested, prostitutes, a lot of things. Now, the average income in the area is about $160,000 a year. That gave us the luxury lifestyle brand, which is Monko, to put this location here so that we could show not only the district, but the country that not only can cannabis survive on K Street, but a person of color like myself could have a business on K Street.
Yeah, it's. I'm sure that the area right now is far removed than what it was when Marion Barry was mayor. I can imagine how long and how much change has happened to that area. So when you're talking about it, that, you know, in D.C., it's been a very difficult path for legal cannabis to go across and how what's being allowed. So you're a lifelong D.C. resident, and you had been a formerly incarcerated citizen, as you call it. And you said, mentioned about how laws surrounding cannabis have changed, recognition of it being in a healthy, active lifestyle, but you can still find places in the district where you can buy cannabis, still illegal, or get a lower quality product. And what you wanted to do was definitely put something of a higher level to fit where, I mean, there's so much money that's being put in D.C. I mean, there's obviously, I mean, without saying who, the demographic, the makeup of those that are coming into the storefront, what can you tell me? Do you definitely see policymakers or those that are underneath those policymakers that are definitely visiting the store?
Absolutely. We see policymaker staff. We see on the local as well as the federal government side. But, you know, being I-71 and being a truly gifting store, you know, cannabis is the safe haven for those who want to have adult use. And, you know, not only policymakers, but we see a lot of influence people, not only, you know, of, you know, white, black, brown. We see them all. The thing is that the beauty of having this location allows people who want to live a cannabis lifestyle and get a quality product, and they know that it's going to be in a safe environment. And that's the biggest thing, that they feel they understand the experience of walking and doing business with Monco, because that's what we thrive on, the experience.
And on top of that, with DC, so many issues where there's always been with those policymakers that might be coming to the store, there are those that have also gone on and have made it difficult for what the public in the District of Columbia has wanted, going back to 1998, when the initial medical marijuana shift was passed. And then it took 11 years to get it to be implemented. And then the same thing going with 2013, Initiative 71, legalizing possession up to 2 ounces of cannabis, ability to give up to 1 ounce, personal cultivation of a small number of plants. And also that, trying to go and get across with the issues going along with that. Meanwhile, with all the obstacles, the market has gotten, as of last year, sales $56 million, quite an offshoot right there for that. And one of the things is that DC, and because of I-71, it's the role model, the catalyst that should be passed across the state, or state to state, and across the country. What have you gotten so far for those that have looked to take what that initiative has done and trying to give as much freedom as possible for those to go enjoy cannabis?
Well, you know, being the chairman of the I-71 committee, the first thing was we wanted, as an organization and as a group, we wanted to make sure that our voice was heard. And so when I came on, we wanted, you know, the things was, we were fighting from beyond the shadows, behind the shadows. No one wanted to put a face. And I told them that I was willing to step from behind the shadows and fight with local politicians, advocacy groups that were fighting against cannabis being free will in the district. So what we wanted to do as a group, and what I wanted to do as a chairman, was step up and say, hey, who can we get, number one, on council that supports us and understands where cannabis, not only in D.C., but across the country is going? Because this is just not a D.C. thing or a Maryland thing or a Virginia thing or DMV thing. This is across the a country when we're talking about medical use and we're talking about adult use. So we have to understand the difference between the two. But the I-71 community understood that, hey, as when D.C. wrote this law, you go back to 1998, you talk about when it first was initiated, the Department of Health did not want cannabis to be legal. So there were laws and bylaws written that affected that and still affect those businesses today. As we talk about the $56 million that was made last year, D.C. is capable of making $650 million a year industry in the cannabis. It's all if they'll allow free will. And when I say free will, if we allow us to operate like a California or Colorado, like our counterparts in Massachusetts or even next door in Maryland, if we allow, if we take that from, if the district takes that attitude, if we liberal enough to understand that that's where cannabis, the industry is going, that's what the culture is going. And so for us as the I-71 committee, that's what our challenges have been, to understand how to bring what other states, how to replicate that and bring it to DC so that we can have a robust or ro- a thriving industry. And that's what I've been fighting for. That's what my counterparts have been fighting for us to not only have a license, but for us to be in a thriving business. And that's been a hurdle. It's not been easy, but it's the fight that I got to the table. It's the fight that I fight every day for returned citizens, for Black and brown, and for non-Black and brown people who want to be part of this industry. The cannabis industry, and I'm sorry for going on, is the new industry. It's the new alcohol. But we have to understand there's no banking behind this as of yet. So the laws here are always constrained because when there's commerce without banking, there's an issue. And that's what we have to recognize first and foremost, that we have to get banking in place so that not only the legislators can get comfortable, but those naysayers can get comfortable, because now you get to regulate things. And as you know, this country is all about commerce, regulations, and how the dollar is going to flow. And that's what we've been fighting against.
Now, stay tuned. We have more Blunt Business coming up after a short break.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
On this program and on our Blunt Business program, which I both host, you know, we've talked to a bunch of councils, organizations that are always constantly trying to go have communications with the federal government, with policymakers that could really be lobbied and pushed across to get more help in cannabis, where it's the Safe Banking Act, whether it's, you know, the DEA looking to reschedule from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3 to federal legalization through the STATES Act or whatever act you want, the MORE Act. The thing is, you have the real advantage of proximity and for the fact that you're not one of these organizations. I mean, I-71 obviously is an association that is well noticed within the city itself, and you're the closest. And probably, what, I mean, I imagine with the fact that your store is there and other I-71 stores are in the same proximity, being able to go ahead and meet some of these people within K Street or others that are coming in that can influence or curry favor to get to the policymakers. And maybe, listen, the lobbying money doesn't matter so much. How about we get cannabis to be passed in terms of what political capital is gained from it, as opposed to what's being put in a politician's pockets? What have you had a chance to do in terms of being in the area on a regular basis? And if you've had the chance through I-71, the committee, as a chairman or just as a business owner, the chance to talk or communicate with some of those policymakers about what can be done to help offer more relief from a tax benefit or just from a benefit for the public out there to be able to get their hands on cannabis, because it helps in so many ways.
Well, you know, the biggest hurdle here is state, local level or territory. DC is a territory versus federal, right? So if you look at the hurdles, last year I did a Congressional Black Caucus event where we had local and state officials, and we brought, you know, what we were bringing is knowledge, facts. And that's when the Safe Bank Act hadn't gotten out of committee. Within a year, what we've been doing, or what I've been doing, is advocating behind the scenes, I just joined Initiative, Veteran Initiative 22, which takes veterans from pills to plants. Doing these type things and aligning myself with the organizations who are fighting for the Safer Bank Act, who are fighting for descheduling cannabis or decriminalizing cannabis, that's what we do every day. Whether it's on a local level or on a federal level, you have to continue to push the envelope and continue to push the message. The message is here is 1984. The Supreme Court said cannabis is medically legal to cure certain diseases. Right. But we still face incarceration. We still face this descheduling thing from cannabis. Why is cannabis a Schedule One drug? But it's medically, it's been proven that it's a medical healing plant.
So there's been a lot of issues with the DC Council in terms of the back and forth about where the I-71 committee has been working to help to support what the voters want about not shutting down the I-71 gifting shops. One of the areas that I talked about from the that I saw from the Washingtonian was they talked about how where the issues are because of federal meddling, that the cannabis industry is populated by an array of so-called I-71 businesses or gifting that have an advantage of the law's gifting provision to look and act like marijuana sales operations without actually selling the cannabis. Legacy operators, basically, which it's a different, that's a different scenario than it is in any other state, because all the other states want to go ahead and offer provisional licenses for social equity, which is wonderful. But how much are they serving towards the legacy operators? And your, the District of Columbia, where you are and what the committee that you're serving for, this is the biggest example of legacy operators, you know, trying to go ahead and continue on, still doing all right and having the chance to go and operate, but not being shut down. It's that's real social equity at its core. What do you say about what the, so the, getting that, that environment that's really specific and very unique to any other market out there?
It is, but it isn't. So let me say this.
Sure.
What you said is correct. Here's the problem. You had a rider from Maryland, from Andy Harris, who's a U.S. congressman from Eastern Maryland, who said that if the district gets a recreation or adult use business license, then it was going to prohibit Maryland. It would take tax dollars out of Maryland, right? Now Maryland is legally...
Right.
We still have this rider over our head. But as you know, back in last December, we got 13 laws passed or revisions to the current at that point was the amendments were passed. And one of the things was that basically it was to take unlicensed business to license within a year. So as of this month up until January, at the end of this month to January, I can't remember, and it's people like myself who are legacy, who are I-71 gifting shops, has the ability to get a cannabis license. Mm-hmm. DC's problem, though, is that a lot of these guys don't feel comfortable because the cultivation in DC has been the biggest issue. So they think that, hey, even though if I go get a license, you're still setting me up to fail because DC has not solved the cultivation issue as of yet. Although we've applied for cultivation license, it takes about 2 years minimum to get up a full ramp up cultivation program. You look at states like New Jersey, look at New York right now, Massachusetts had that problem. Connecticut is having that problem. When you have more people, it's supply and demand. And if you don't have the supply, people are going to continue to do legacy stores like myself. But the district is saying after a certain amount of days, if you don't have these licenses, we're going to enforce. And I understand both sides of the coin. So as a person who advocates every day, what we're advocating for is saying, hey, let's fix our cultivation problem so that we can have a robust and a thriving cannabis market. Let's do it right. Let's show the country that a 8.8 square mile city or territory can do this thing right. And so that's what I fight for. That's what I-71 fight for every day. And that's, you know, so again, our abilities to say, hey, yeah, we are legacy and we're social equity. We're inclined to definitely do it right. But the tools that we're fighting with right now is like a nuclear missile versus someone has a bazooka. And the reason I say that is that the district, the legislators here, some understand, but most don't. and they're carrying this nuclear weapon against us to say, oh, you guys are doing it wrong. You're hating on the medical market, or you're not working with the medical market. But let me say this. The medical market is suffering as well, because they can't, the cultivation here is of poor or mid-level quality.
Right.
And that's what you get. So you get this impasse of two markets, both want to thrive, but they're looking for the same thing, the right product.
Right. At the moment, they're saying that was August of this year that these dispensaries only sold a little over $1.5 million in cannabis in August. And that's what's going so far. Cultivation centers sold a little bit more than last month, but the dispensary sales have been dropping since the Maryland market opened for legal adult use. Where off the bat. So that's the part is coming across. And with 68 square miles, or as we were, right, what do we have now? I think it was 60 square miles. Yes, that's all you have. And how much of that is possibly available for cultivation space if you're going to do it within the district? Is there something where there can be some kind of a, you know, a point where Maryland can also, because of the adult use, is there any way to get it where Maryland can be used for cultivation and be brought into D.C.?
The only way that that's going to happen if the federal government allows interstate commerce. And for those who do not know what interstate commerce, it'll just like alcohol, it allows that a drug or substance can come over from state to state over its border or its province. And in that, right now, the federal government, with cannabis not being legal on a federal level, that's not going to happen. We don't have banking, so that's another issue. So the district right now is like, hey, okay, we're going to have but so many cultivators, right? We're all fighting for space. I'm fighting for a cultivation license right now. I want to be vertically integrated. If you don't have the space and the ability, but you got to understand, D.C. is a city of about 800,000 plus people. But D.C. is also a city that sees over 31 million people a year and that visit the district. And so it's just not those 800,000 people. Yeah, that's your base. That's your core people. That's your everyday people who live in the neighborhood. But for those who visit the city and they're looking for adult use cannabis, that's what they're looking for. How can I get a quality product in a safe environment and that gives me the experience that I get in California, in Colorado, or anywhere else in this country that's legally? And for us, that's what Monco is about. Building that and understanding, hey, one customer at a time, and giving them that experience.
Now, is there anything coming up now in terms of possible ballot initiatives or amendments that are coming up, say, in the 2024 election? Is there anything right now that can be done where petitions can be put in place and DC could go ahead and go the route and not have to be behooven to the I-71 case and be able to go and just become adult use? Can there be a ballot initiative put in place to make that possible, just to go ahead and make DC much like Maryland?
Well, first of all, the Rotter Act has to be removed. In order for the Rotter to be removed, Congress has to balance the budget. Good luck with that, right?
Right.
Second of all, is a Rotter cannot be introduced or removed because of what they call a good faith or I can't remember the term off the top of my head, but basically saying that, hey, if something's introduced and a rider has been voted on, it cannot be replaced. Neither can it be reintroduced at the time until that budget is met. Now,
and there's nothing that Mayor Bowser has ever done, or just where you said the DC Council, where they've looked at something, because they're not a state. I mean, I don't know what the rules are of the governing body for a district, but if there's something there they can do that could be much like what a state can do.
They can't do anything because of the rider. And so the I-71 came along because of the rider.
Right.
And then you have to understand, too, is that when we are trying to get adult use, we're hoping that the DEA will deschedule cannabis from a 1 to a 3. So if it, they deschedule it, then you could have adult use because now it's no longer a Schedule 1. It's a Schedule 3, which in turn makes it recreational. So there's some things, but we're still waiting on the federal. We have to, you have to understand the mayor has done all, everything she can from the standpoint of what she's bound by. Her powers are, and she has handcuffs because when I tell the story, you mentioned Mayor Berrien, right?
Right.
The when Mayor Berrien got arrested and convicted, the federal government took its power back from the district. And that was one of the things that they wanted, to be able to control the district. And that's why you have what we have today. We have to depend on our federal counterparts to make legislation that will allow us locally to live by and abide by the cannabis laws based on their legislation and not ours. Our local legislators are depending on them, their counterparts, to make these rules and regulations so that it can take it off their plate. But in the meantime, we have to go from a license to a license and abide by what's coming. And what we're trying to do here now is to live in that box or in that space as comfortable as possible until we get help from our federal counterparts.
Rolling into some sponsors, but we'll be right back with more Blunt Business.
Welcome back to Blunt Business. What I want to know now is, what is being done in terms of, with Initiative 71, I-71, because of the fact that in states you have a control board, you have some kind of an infrastructure, a framework put together for that. So who's doing the part of policing all the operators to make sure they're above board, that there's compliance in place? Obviously, they're not going to have a metric in place. They're not going to have anything like that. But where, you know, who's holding the shops accountable among the shops?
Well, the I-71 committee, we have 28 members. We pay taxes. We're registered with the Office of Tax and Revenue. We have a CFO to operate, and we have a business license. Now, there's other bad actors out there. And what the city has said, if you're not doing these things, trying to get a pathway to a license, you're a bad actor, right? So they're giving that space from, I think, the mid, starts the end of October to the beginning of January for you to get a license. But you have to have a clean hands, which means you got to pay your taxes, that your business license has to be in order, that, you know, you have to have all the T's dotted and all the I's dotted and the T's crossed. Excuse me. If you don't, then ABBA or CABA, which is the cannabis board, then will enforce along, and they will be because of what was passed last December, then MPD gets involved. If you do not have a conditional license to continue to operate, then they will begin to raid. That's my understanding. Now, am I agreeing with it? I absolutely am. Because as someone who's tried to do it right, and as someone who's tried to set the culture and the metric bar to be very high in the city, I expect that my counterparts in this illicit market, in this I-71 market, do as I do and follow by the same rules that I follow by. Because guess what? In order for us to ever make the necessary steps, we have to make sure that we're following the necessary rules in order to make those steps.
Now, what you do have in place at the moment, besides the I-71 statute, is that as of this past March, Mayor Bowser, and it was signed and it was enacted into law, the Medical Cannabis Amendment Act of 2022, MCAA. So a medical program you do have now, serving almost 29,000 DC resident patients and thousands of non-DC resident patients. What can you tell me about where the medical program is there and what that helps out? Because obviously with that, then you obviously do have a governing body within the cannabis industry to handle through the Alcohol, Beverage, and Cannabis Administration, APCA. So what happens now with the medical side? Is that something that changes how the stores are being operated at all, or is that something that you would take advantage of?
We will all have a medical license under the new license structure. But here's the problem. As I said, D.C. got 800,000 people, right? You just had 29,000 medical card holders, right? Numbers don't add up. And the reason is that you can't have a medical card if you have a federal job, or you have if you possessed a gun. And if you think about that, most women who are single parents who live in a household in the district with that's in crime, whatever neighborhood you live, rather have a gun to protect their house than a medical cannabis card. So then go to the next factor. If you take that, I am a GS-14. I make $140,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year. You think I'm going to give my job up to smoke cannabis or to see? No, you're not going to do that. You're not going to do that. The numbers don't add up. And so when we're going into this medical world or this medical providence that they want us from a license standpoint, who's going to buy cannabis? And we're forced to go into a space and fight for 29,000 people when there's 800,000 people that live in this area.
And like you said, there a lot of them have federal jobs. Terrence, you know what, man? I knew I was going to be interested once I got this opportunity to do this interview. But Jesus Christ, that is a cluster up there that you're dealing with. I do not envy what you, your fellow members of the committee, and what you as a business owner up there have to go through right now. I mean, it's like, I honestly never knew it could be this complicated or this, you know, what a tangled web it is. But but after all this, you have to at least, the fact that you really have the ICE 51 clause, you have it here, and that this committee, obviously, it's imperative in the District of Columbia that all those business owners, along with yourself, are continue to fight the fight, because this is very strategic and very complicated.
It is. And, you know, I thank you for the opportunity again to, number one, allow me to speak, you know, on behalf of myself, the I-71 committee, and all the other I-71 stores in the area. It's a privilege and honor to do so. But I say this, this particular beehive or wasp's nest is a different type of fight.
Yeah.
But I told myself when I got into this business, if I couldn't get a seat at the table, I wasn't going to do it. And you know, I've been fortunate enough to get a seat at the table because of I-71 in the committee. But I've also been forced to continue to fight for people of color like myself and, you know, returned citizens like myself who want the opportunity to prove to the world that, hey, you know, we made a mistake in life. You know, we're trying to do it right. But what we have here is a conundrum of local government who, on one hand, they want a robust or thriving market, but they don't understand how it works. And until we all can get on the same line or on the same platform to fight the same fight, it's going to continue to be this way.
Yeah. So, in the last year or so, I got to talk to the folks from the Justice Foundation. We've had a chance to interview with the folks at Urban Aroma, those that are also putting the fight up for legacy operators. And I've said it constantly on this program and on Blunt Business that if you want to talk about social equity, you have to put the legacy operators into the discussion. And what you're dealing with right now, it's exactly what it is right now with I-71 in District of Columbia. So the prime examples of legacy operators, the plight, the struggle, but also doing as a collective, doing right and be able to go and serve the public there, 800,000 folks, whoever can be able to go and get their hands on cannabis and make it possible for them to go ahead and buy and enjoy it. Have you gotten a lot of contact from those that are trying to help in that cause? Any, a lot of social equity organizations or those, and how much response have you gotten from the fact that from a legacy operator standpoint, what these other states need to be understanding, that how important legacy operators are to this space, as opposed to just giving someone new a social equity provision license that might be able to go and start a business up, might figure it out, but might ultimately fail as well.
Well, here's a problem. You look at a state like New York. There's a ton of gray market or illicit legacy stores in New York.
Absolutely.
But if you look at the promises on the social equity side, you had a lot of celebrities saying, I got a fund of $200, $300 million. Never came to fruition.
Yeah.
So how can you, as a guy who's been hustling all his life, to give up 51%, give 51% control, but only have 10% equity? You want to basically use them like a shell, a tool. Then if they snap out on their own, they can get the license, but they don't have the resources.
Yeah.
So as I sit on DEI, panels and conferences and things like of that nature, and we talk about social equity, there's no social equity without justice. There's no justice without appropriations. And you can chalk it up the way you want to. They can paint this pretty picture like, oh yeah, if we're going to give 200 licenses and we're going to do this and that. Where's the funding? Where are the resources?
Right.
Say that this guy can thrive or this woman can thrive on what to be successful in a market that's of MSO, big money, old white guys, excuse me, that got tons of lines of credit and they got old money everywhere. And they say, hey, we can lose money in New York until this and that. We mom and pop. We're black and brown.
Right.
We can't do it.
Jeez.
And so the issue is yeah, you look at social equity, you look at Kiki Davis in LA. She sued the city of Los Angeles and the state of California for those 200 licenses. They settled on 100, right?
Yeah.
Ask me how many of those 100, I don't know the number, but I want to know how many of those 100 licenses that were social equity has survived or thriving businesses today in the state of California, in the city of Los Angeles.
Couldn't tell you.
But I'm pretty sure if I was a bet, it would be less than 25.
Well, because they don't want to, well, the media is not going to report that. They'll report, oh, we got your business open. Look, they're opened up. Look at this great grand opening. That won't tell you about what happened, if it survives or not.
I'm doing a big celebration on the 18th. I've been open a year. The first month in business, I made $37,000. Now,
yeah,
I can tell you I'm on pace to do about over $4 million for the year.
Wow.
But that's working 75, 80 hours every week.
Oh, yeah.
I went to the doctor in March. He told me, if you don't take a vacation, I'm putting you in the hospital.
Oh, man.
So let me tell you, as a gentleman who's turning 51, God bless, on the 27th of this month, if you want to get into a business that everything is against you because of your skin color and because of what you've been through in life and because of the resources, don't get in cannabis. Everybody think it's sweet. I'm going to get a lot of money. I'm going to do that. It ain't that way.
Right.
It's not that way. It's not the streets. And so what I tell people when they ask me is it's two things in life to be successful. You got to breathe and you got to walk.
Yeah.
First and foremost, cannabis will take the air out of your body and your legs from underneath you.
Yeah.
If you're not careful. And that's not a lie. That's the truth.
Yeah. That's, wow, man. Well, that's a lot. You laid it out perfectly. I'll tell you, I never knew, but this is why I like doing these shows. This right here is important, and I want this board to get out there. So let's get people to go ahead and know more. First of all, I want to go ahead and make sure everybody knows about the I-71 committee. The letter I-71committee.org. The I-71committee.org. You can find all the information there. And for those that want to go ahead and jump on board, even if they're not in District of Columbia, what can they do? How can they help?
Well, first and foremost, you can write Congressman Andy Harris and tell him, let's get a budget passed so that he can take the ride off D.C., so that D.C. can be adult use and that we can play by the same laws that everybody else is playing by. Second of all is support your local I-71 business. If you're visiting the district, if you got a favorite place, if you don't, you're more than welcome to come to Mako. I'm at 444 K Street Northwest. But continue to voice your opinion. Help your veterans, help your local causes that want to support cannabis, not only on a municipal level, but on a adult use level. And most of all, continue to speak up for things that you believe in. Marijuana is not the thing of the 60s and 70s. Let's relieve the stench and stigma. Let's be free will like we use alcohol. Let's be able to indulge in a community, in a culture, and in a business just like everything else without people frowning upon us.
And so we want to make sure also to mention, you mentioned the store, again, 444 K Street Northwest, and the website is Monko, MONKO.CO, MONKO.CO. And for those who are going to be looking at the website, you're looking at where you have flower, pre-rolls, edibles, vaporizers, but also look at that they're being featured as gifts. And there are points associated to each gift. So real quick, of the products you have in store, what can you tell me about those? A little bit of what's been highlighted, people that haven't been able to go and frequent the store, what has really been popular? What are people really, really attaching to?
Well, of course, you know, your edibles is the biggest thing. Our flowers, you know, it has been, you know, we get rave reviews. Most of our products here are very, you know, people love. I believe in quality, not quantity. And I, you know, I'm not the store that you go in and get quantity. I'm in the store that you come in, or the dispensary, you come in and you get quality. And so most of the products, all of the products here are quality products. We thrive on that, and that, you know, and we like to understand, we like to present a experience. We're going to find out what brings you in. Is it something recreational? Are you dealing with pain? Are you can't sleep? We want to make sure we put you in the right product. And that's one of the things that, you know, I've been proud of in training our staff on, is just presenting the right experience and being educational about the things that we do. And to the point where starting October the 17th, we're doing our first class on microdosing THC from an educational standpoint, and teaching people how to actually microdose and what is needed, the ins and outs of it.
Right. Wonderful. So again, the I-71committee.org, monco.ko. Again, been joined here with Terrence White, CEO of, this will be CEO and founder of cannabis lifestyle brand Monko, MONKO.CO, and chairman of the I-71 committee. Terrence, thank you for opening my eyes to this, and I hope our audience really gets into this, and they hopefully will reach out to you and support you and your and all the causes right there along District of Columbia and all the businesses like yourself. Really appreciate
you and the opportunity, and I appreciate it. And if anything, if you're ever in D.C. or you need me for anything else, please don't hesitate to reach out.
Fantastic. And thank you, folks, for listening. We'll talk to you next time.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day.
Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only.
Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.